are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's a Wednesday, which means it's a Winky Wednesday. Going to bring on my guest momentarily, Mr. Nick Winkler, as usual on Wednesdays. We're going to talk a little bit about the Reuben Foster looming situation that should be handed down, judge's decision sometime Wednesday. And then OTAs are here, so they're actually players doing things on the field again for the 49ers and some video clips here and there. And then, of course, the mailbags. We're going to get into all of that momentarily. I do want to remind everybody to subscribe, rate, review the show. iTunes, we're on Spotify. You can find the show just about anywhere that you can find podcasts. Follow me on Twitter at BDPeacock. You can follow Nick on Twitter at Bay Area Wink. And you can email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Those are the ways to get involved in these mailbag segments. So let's not waste any more time. Let's bring on today's Winky Wednesday guest.
Nicholas Winkler, come on down.
Hello, sir.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great.
That's what I like to hear. Hey, I'm doing great too, man. OTAs, baby.
OTAs, it's happening. There's stuff happening on the field. I missed an odd... You know, which is rare for me to miss a day of this podcast. So those of you looking for a Tuesday pod, it did not happen. Nothing bad was happening. I just wasn't able to get to it.
And life happens sometimes, man.
Yeah, sometimes life happens. Good things. I was at an event and I wasn't able to get away and do a podcast yesterday. So we're gonna have to make it doubly good today, right?
Oh, wow, dude, pressure. Come on.
So shout out to everybody who was worried and like wondering if I was still alive and that was missing the podcast. It's always good to know. You know, it's kind of good to throw that out there sometimes. People are like, oh, yeah, I do miss the podcast. Actually, let me shout out real quick on Twitter at Hustlin' Apples. He said, my workday was awful without Locked On 49ers podcast. Makes me appreciate you even more. Can't wait for Winky Wednesday.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you ruined a couple people's commute this morning.
Yeah, that's the big one, man. You get up in the morning, you get your coffee, you're like, all right, let's do some Locked On 49ers. Oh, it's not there. What do I do?
Yeah, and I'm the same. I'm like that with PTI. Yeah. I love listening to them in the car. And, yeah, when they have a day off, man, I'm upset.
Yeah.
And you, of course, too.
Of course. Is it weird? You know that you have your favorite shows, and then you tune in, and it's a guest host. And
so you're like, oh, I don't like it.
It's weird. It's different. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes you like it when there's a little change up and is a new person following the old format. But
I'll listen to it when it's somebody else. But I need Tony and Mike, man.
Right. I hear you. Well, speaking of, are you going to be around to fill in for me on some Locked On 49ers episodes when my baby comes?
Yeah, man. I'll be ready.
Okay. Make the call out to the right-hander from the bullpen.
There we go. I'll come in there, throw heat, man, like 65, 66.
You're going to do six shows a week, correct?
Yeah, two okay. On Mondays, three on Tuesdays, and one on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Yeah. I was thinking weekend, but you can do it that way, too.
No, I'm going to crank them all out, and I'm going to put them out one after the other, too.
Put them all out the same day.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Maybe I'll just do them all six on Monday.
Just make up storylines for a couple weeks and throw them all out there and see if you're right.
According to Brian Peacock.
All right, let's see. What's going on here? Some news around the league. The Raiders traded a seventh-round draft pick for a terrible quarterback in Christian Hackenberg from the New York Jets.
Man, and, sweet move, guys.
Yeah, kind of crazy career he's had. No injuries. He just literally could not get on the field as a second-round quarterback to not even get snaps for a team with quarterback woes and a bad football team.
Says a lot.
Yeah, and so Gruden is collecting former quarterbacks that were on his Gruden Camp TV show. He's got EJ Manuel there, Connor Cook, and now Christian Hackenberg all fighting to back up Derek Carr. So basically what that means is they're praying that Derek Carr doesn't get hurt.
Right.
Let's see. What else happened around the league? Oh, this is from Albert Breer. One of the dumbest things I've heard, not because of Albert Breer. He's just reporting this. He said, per sources, one anthem idea being discussed by the league, leaving it up to the home team on whether teams come out for the anthem. If teams do come out for the anthem, potential that teams could be assessed 15-yard penalties for kneeling.
What? That's so stupid. That has nothing to do with the game.
It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Yay.
Oh, man. What are they doing? Why is the NFL so dumb and so... I don't know. Like, just cannot tell the temperature. Like, how...
Yeah. ass backwards.
Right. How far off can you be from what's going on right now?
Right.
But
well, it's funny. I told you I watched that All or Nothing show, and it showed the episode where the Cowboys came out all together and kneeled before, right, you know, before the anthem
with Jerry Jones.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were getting booed by their home crowd while they were doing it.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that was wild, man.
In Texas, that's oof.
But it wasn't even during the anthem; like they were just kneeling.
Oh, right, because then they went and stood up for the anthem later. Yeah, that's right.
It's like the people just didn't get it. Yeah. They're just so caught up in like, oh, they're kneeling. Kneeling's bad. Boo. Yeah. Like, no, actually know what's happening before you start talking or booing.
Not woke. Not woke as the
kids. Hey, you were talking about not woke. Nice. You were talking about things going on around the league. So I got a question for you.
Sure.
So the Eagles released Michael Kendricks, linebacker. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that somebody the Niners should look at?
I would have thought possibly before, but they're so stacked at the position. And now with Reuben Foster, potentially getting the okay to come back. We'll see what happens Wednesday. We got to talk about that. But
I mean, they're stacked, but they're stacked with guys that are like, eh.
It would be hard. It would be, I would say yes. He's a good player. I bet he would find a better opportunity with less.
Gotcha. Because less competition.
Right. So two or three veterans in-house that could come in and play for the 49ers right away. And then you have two young players that they want to be the future starters. So I think he could find a team with less depth where he has a better path to being a potential starter for a while.
That being said, I mean, Reuben Foster can't stay healthy. I mean, I know it was just one season, but it felt like he was going out every game.
I mean, let's say he and Malcolm Smith are both free agents. I signed Kendricks before Smith. So last year at this time, apparently the 49ers and Eagles talked about a trade for Michael Kendricks. So there's interest there and he would be a fit, but they've already gone other directions. So now it's kind of unnecessary, I would say.
Right. Okay.
But if something happens, injuries, and they need a starting caliber linebacker, you make that call for sure.
Yeah, there's always injuries, man.
And I wonder if he's going to wait to see if that happens in camp before he signs or if he's going to
sign somewhere. Probably smart, you wait till somebody needs you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Michael Irvin's doing right now.
Michael Irvin?
Michael Irvin, goodness. Oh, Des Bryant.
I was like,
88 on the Cowboys,
He and Rafael Palmeiro making comebacks, okay.
Dude, he had a home run, right?
Palmeiro,
he's 53.
That's amazing.
Poor Jose Bautista couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
Football podcast. Football.
Right.
Football.
All right. Let's go back to football here. Judge Nona Klippin is expected to make a decision on the Reuben Foster case today. So some people have probably already know that decision if they're listening to this later Wednesday or Thursday or something. Could go a number of ways. Let's do this. Let's put Nick Winkler in the jury box.
I like it.
And then look at what evidence we have, what we know so far.
Okay, bring it at me.
So you're a jury of Reuben Foster's peers. It's not even Reuben Foster. This is just,
I'll play 12 people right now.
You are 12 people, and it doesn't even have to be someone that you've seen play football, that you admire as an athlete or anything like that, plays for your team.
Well, they kick me off the jury, right, if I said that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. What we know from evidence that we've heard, and maybe there's more out there, but we pretty much got everything reported what happened in the hearing. I'm sure there's not anything they know that didn't go out in that preliminary hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that happened was she reports this incident.
Right. And it looks bad.
Right. And it looks terrible. And you're thinking, oh, gosh. Okay. So that's evidence against Reuben Foster. Gun on the bathroom floor, which is one of the weirdest parts of this. He's got a loaded gun. An automatic rifle on the floor of his bathroom. Is that just a place where he keeps it?
Sounds planted.
Maybe I don't know. But
by her.
That's speculation.
I know. Speculate so much.
As a jury member, you're just writing down all this speculatory stuff on your notepad.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theory stuff.
Drawing pictures of what she did.
But that would be so. That's not evidence. So the evidence is she said all this stuff happened. She had some injuries, but also, those injuries weren't consistent with what it would look like if an NFL linebacker punched you 8 to 10 times in the head, right? So, So that's basically the entire bit of evidence, right, against Reuben Foster. So her testimony is completely recanted at the hearing.
Do I get to see the video of her recanting her testimony and all that?
Oh, is there video of it?
Of her crying on the stand. Like, I'm sure they recorded it, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe for courtroom, maybe for the judge's purposes, but not for public consumption.
Yeah, I'm sure. But you don't think that that would be something if I was a jury and this went to trial, the defense attorney would want to show me, right?
I think that's So, and that's what everyone said, is that this was very believable. So she was
right.
Here's the thing, is she's a great liar one way or the other. She got them to press charges against him, very, very serious charges. Or she got a bunch of other people to believe this other lie if the original part. So like one way or the other, she's a great liar.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, but then, yeah, I was listening to you the other day and you were talking about how the cops didn't even follow up on that fight that she told them about.
Right. Like, so that was
just horrible police work.
It's bad. So 2 days after the initial arrest, and she's already recanted at this point. So she's like, okay, look, this actually happened at a fight the night before. He never did all this stuff. And then you hear all that on the stand coming out,
right,
that she said that she stole money from him, that she had been did time. She went to jail for falsely accusing another man in 2011 of, you know, domestic violence.
And how does the deputy district attorney not know that?
Right. Exactly.
That's horrible.
They've got to look at her.
I mean, like, maybe they knew and they're like, nah, let's just not bring that up.
If this is your only witness, this is the only person that really has any evidence to bring to your side, if you are the prosecutor here, you're definitely looking at her records. So like, let's see what happened. She went to jail in 2011. This would be a very obvious red flag that jumped out if you were looking at her rap sheet. And I'm sure they would have to do that, right?
I think it's one of two things. Yeah, it's either they were bad at their job and didn't do the proper research before filing this paper, or two, look the other way because they're like trying to make a name for themselves or something, and like, oh, this is going to get me in the papers. If I get this conviction, this is going to be huge for my career. Like,
that's what happened.
I don't see a third option.
That was the original thing. They paraded the story out to the public. They said, we're going to make an example of them. And they were strutting around and puffed out their chest about this story. So I think maybe for that reason, they didn't want to believe any story recanting. And I'm sure this happens all the time in domestic violence cases too, where the victim recants their story, whether it's true or not. But in this case, it wasn't just that I'm not cooperating because I don't want to put, you know, my ex-boyfriend behind bars. It's that she came out and had all this crazy testimony that you're like, whoa,
just crazy. Yeah. I laughed because you said, I'm sure this happens all the time. And I don't think this happens ever.
This quite right.
I mean, this is such a crazy story, man.
And that's what that, the attorney and former assistant DA Stephen Clark said afterward. He said, I've never seen this kind of a meltdown.
I just think, you know, it's all I've heard, you know, and I've done a lot of reading on this from everybody. And, you know, I've tried to do everything I could to, cause I'm really interested in how this is going to go down. And, you know, I was really worried that he was a white, you know, a woman beater, and that, you know, I liked this guy cause I met him. He's a nice guy. Like, and I was like, oh wow, he fooled me, you know, but if this is all made up and like this poor guy, like his name's been drugged through the mud, you know, and just with what I've heard, I don't know how you could go through with a trial.
Right. So if you're asked to deliberate based on all the things we've seen and all the evidence,
long.
You know, it's like there's zero chance, right?
Yeah. He could be convicted. You just go in there and you go, that she's crazy, right?
Even if you
just look around, all 12 of you nod, and then you go back. You're like, no.
Even if there's a doubt, there's certainly not enough evidence to be like, within a reasonable doubt, did this for sure. Like, you,
and
there's
it sucks,
no way
too, because like, oh, I say sucks. I mean, he clearly had an illegal weapon, you know, so that part sucks. But like, they never would have found any of that if she hadn't made up this whole story and called the cops on him and tried to ruin his career and all that.
And it was everything too. There was like a story about a dog, and she's like, no, that just didn't happen. There was
throwing the phone.
And she's like, I actually threw the phone at him. They weren't my phones anyways. And like, just
and the guy that she got in the car to dial 911 said, she's calm and collected and all this. Like, are you really like that if you just got hit 8 to 10 times by your boyfriend?
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's a wild story, man.
And the part you mentioned about seeing her actually testify and just seeing her face to face, you know, if she has that look on her face, you're like, oh, this woman is kind of crazy. Like,
right.
You know,
you get that idea. Crazy eyes going.
You see someone across the street and you're like, that, I do not want to cross.
I'm just going to walk person.
That person looks nuts, right?
Casually, so, not make eye contact.
So that could be something that could help or hurt their case too. But so basically the bottom line is, from everything that we know, evidence wise.
Right.
Zero chance you would deliberate and be like, yeah, this is a guilty
verdict. Zero chance. Right. I cannot imagine a judge allowing this to proceed.
That, same here. So that's
let alone
what I'm
glad it get to a jury of 12. I mean, no, it's just not going to happen.
And the fact that she deliberated for this week and is thinking about it and reviewing the evidence from all the experts, they say that's good for Reuben Foster's side. So I would expect that this case gets dismissed today.
Yeah, he definitely still gets a suspension just because of the gun. and the pot. But yeah, no, this is, I can't imagine.
Yeah, gun and pot combined. Yeah. And I wonder if the league, because it was funny when this whole thing was going down with the testimony last week, and I was tweeting a few things, and there was one random person that doesn't follow me, but is a Cowboys fan with Zeke Elliott avatar, just responded with this: six games. And I was like, yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, it doesn't. I mean, just you have no idea what the league's going to do and what they. Yeah. What evidence they think is important, and you know, maybe if they combine all these things together in one punishment, or someone just got suspended for one game, right? Who was it? Some player in the NFL just got busted for marijuana, and
it was just one game.
Two games now. I got to get this right. I can't remember where that was now. I probably won't find it. But anyway, someone just got suspended for a pot thing, and it was, I think it was one or two games.
All right. Yeah, it might be a six games, and then, you know, there's an appeal and it drops down to four or something. I mean, maybe they even appeal and he plays a couple games, kind of like what happened with Zeke last year.
Right.
You know, but that, I mean, that derailed their season when he went out. So that might not be such a good thing, you know, to have him in there and have all the questions all around and constantly worried about, am I going to play? Am I going to be suspended? Like, that clearly weighed on him.
Right.
And, yeah. And I don't, you know, maybe you just serve it right up front. Like, all right, let's just get this done with and let's move on.
If it's short, unless it's something that's stupidly long that you're like, no way that we can let this go.
Yeah, if it's eight games or something.
And but if it's like, you know, one or two games, you serve it while everyone's healthy.
Right.
You just go for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Dude, hey, real quick, let's just talk about some OTAs. I don't know how much you saw, but the biggest takeaway I got from the videos and just, you know, all the beat writers are out there protecting it and just, or protecting it, covering it. It's the Richard Sherman thing. He's not even participating, but he's out there and he's constantly coaching the entire time. It seems to me like that contract is already paying off. Like that's a huge thing. He's out there pulling everybody aside after pretty much every play that they're running, and he's breaking it down. And he's Coach Sherman on the field, man. It's so great to see.
Yeah, and Richard Sherman's been in the system longer than everybody, including the defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh,
right?
That's
what I'm saying. He's like, no, let me tell you how to do it. I've been doing this a long time, you know? And why would you not listen to Richard Sherman, a guy, like you said, that's played in this longer than your coach?
And it's nice to have that if you're a coach and you have this X factor, because sometimes what you're coaching doesn't always get through, but to have
they got a lot of young guys.
Right, exactly. Secondary. Uh-huh, they do. And so they need that. So I think that will, even if he doesn't play or if he comes back, he's not 100% ever again. Maybe not worth the entire contract, but this is absolutely some added bonus to not just Richard Sherman, the player and the cornerback, but having that aspect and that veteran presence in your secondary.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, they're talking about how Jerick McKinnon's everywhere. And, you know, he's that offensive weapon that Juszczyk was supposed to be last year. Yeah. And it's all very exciting. Even I know it's OTAs, they don't even have pads on. It's not, you know, it's not 100%, but it's, oh man, it's exciting.
So Richard Sherman, coach on the field, not practicing. This from Matt Barrows, other players that did not practice in OTAs. Trent Taylor, running back Jeremy McNichols, guard Jonathan Cooper, linebacker Brock Coyle, wide receiver Max McCaffrey, and safety Chancellor James, who's coming off an injury from last season. So everybody else was practicing.
That's great.
Who was taking the first team reps? I think offensive line is an interesting one here. So they just threw Mike McGlinchey in there already. He's a starting right tackle. That's done. Like practice is number one. He's in there. So starting at right tackle was Mike McGlinchey. That's probably not ever going to change. The only question with me and Mike McGlinchey is if they're going to work him in at left tackle as a backup, just to get him some reps there in case, you know, if Joe Staley gets hurt, what's your plan? Is your plan to move McGlinchey over, or do you want to make things simple for him as a rookie, keep him on the right side the whole time, and have someone else be the swing tackle like Gary Gilliam or something? I don't know. That's a question that we'll probably find out an answer to at some point. And with Jonathan,
I mean, maybe they don't do it right away.
Right.
You know, maybe he just really focuses on right tackle, and then later in the season, like, all right, start learning left now.
Yeah, later in camp or something.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he's got, you know, a few months here.
Jonathan Cooper out, so, and I don't know if he would have started in front of Joshua Garnett, but the thinned up Joshua Garnett was playing right guard with the first team unit.
He looked good, too. Did you see any pictures of him?
I saw some, not of Garnett, though.
Yeah, I know. Garnett looked good. He looked slim. He looked slight.
And so, speaking of the Reuben Foster situation, this from Nick Wagner on Twitter. He said that the 49ers rolled with veterans Malcolm Smith and Corey Toomer with the first team defense at the two inside linebacker spots. He said Smith appeared to be handling the calls in the huddle. So that means Smith was playing the middle linebacker spot with Corey Toomer playing the weak side spot. Brock Coyle obviously was not at practice, and neither was Reuben Foster.
Two guys that may be starting week one, who knows?
And then so it might be maybe Coyle comes into the middle, then Malcolm Smith at weak side, which is the way I would expect it to go down. mm-hmm. based on what we've seen in the past, if Ruben's not around. But Ruben could be back at practice tomorrow.
Who was running that edge spot? Was it Armstead?
I didn't see that. Did you see that?
I just saw they listed the D-line, and it was Armstead, Mitchell, Buckner, and Thomas. So I'm not sure who they had outside. Okay,
so they had – yeah, I think Matt Burrows said that Solomon Thomas played some inside and some outside. And somebody said that there was some really great pass rush reps from Solomon Thomas as an interior rusher against the guards.
Great.
Four reps in a row, which is expected. That's what he is. That's he's not an edge guy. He's
that's why he went and got him.
He's an outside end player. And so they kind of had him right all along, but they're playing him out of position. I hope they don't do that again. And it sounds like, you know, in base, he's going to be on playing end, which is fine. But it's what really matters is that sub package. And that's what's going to be on the field more often. To me, Solomon Thomas is an interior guy there. So that's where we need to see where he lines up on third downs.
Yeah, and then Warden, Witherspoon out at corners, mm-hmm. Tardon, Colbert, and at the safety positions. No big surprises there.
Right. Oh, you know what I wanted to talk about was from a couple days ago from Eric Branch's story in the Chronicle. He's a story on McGlinchey and Joe Staley. And McGlinchey said about Joe Staley, quote, "He's been awesome. What you see is what you get with Joe. There's no BS. There's nothing behind the scenes. He is a good person. He's a good player, and he's willing to help his team in any way possible. He's taken me under his wing and helped me out when I needed him to, answering every question I have, meeting with me whenever I need him to, going over film. He's been awesome."
That's great. That's just what you want.
Kind of what you would expect, but also like you're grooming the guy to take your spot.
Yeah, so, but you know, I mean, Joe Staley seems like the kind of guy that gets it. You know, right. He's like, yeah, I got 2 or 3 years left, you know, and he seems like he also loves the 49ers organization. So he's doing, you know, what needs to be done to kind of bridge that gap. It's like when you got an assistant that you know someday is going to take your job, you know, but you're going to have something better. You got something else planned, and you're like, all right, I'm going to make sure that things run smoothly when I get out of here. And that's seems like what he's doing, and that's great, man. That just, you know, makes you feel a lot better about the future, because once, you know, Staley's been so solid on that offensive line for so long that the thought of him ever leaving, it's sad, you know, it's terrifying. But if he's going to take McGlinchey under his wing and teach him all this stuff, yeah, great. Thanks, Joe.
Absolutely. And also just the confidence. He's like, look, he's not going to take my spot anyway. So
yeah, like, let's not worry about that. Like, it's fine. I'll teach you whatever you want. Yeah, I'm here.
It's whereas some players like Ben Roethlisberger, he should feel very secure in his job, but then he kind of like has a little bit of a freak out when they draft a quarterback in like the second round.
But I get it. He said like we should be spending that on stuff we need right now, which I get.
Yeah, that's just
he wasn't mad that it was, you know, that he thinks he's going to take his spot. That was more just like, oh, what are we doing? Come on, we're going to try to win stuff. Let's get somebody that's going to help us win. This guy's just going to take my spot someday.
Yeah, I don't know. That's
I'm with Ben on that.
Really, I could see that, but at the same time,
now he's doing everything right in camp. You know,
but he talked about like he was maybe had another year left. He kind of like hinted he could be retiring. He's been banged up so much in his career. It's just a smart thing. Yeah. You can't wait. Till
yeah,
you
but
need
I get it too.
To
that he's like, but that's a starter right there that we should be drafting.
Yeah, maybe yeah, it is. Maybe it is a starter.
Mm. Yeah. Oh hey! Wow.
All right, you ready for a mailbag?
Let's do it.
Let's go. Let's start with Nothing But Niners on Twitter. They're asking about Richie James or Kendrick Bourne. If there's only one roster spot left and you can only pick one of those two receivers, the 7th-round rookie in Richie James, friend of the podcast, by the way, or Kendrick Bourne, which way you go there?
That's a cool episode with Richie James. I got to see it. You know, I have seen a little bit from Bourne. I've liked what I've seen, but, you know, it didn't blow me away. And, you know, the sky seems to be the limit with Richie James. You know, he seems like that quick receiver. He's, you know, done great in college, but it's a different game once you get to the pros. So let's see how they look in OTAs. Let's see how they look in some preseason games.
Yeah,
it's way too early for that.
I think that's the right answer. We still need to see James. We've seen Bourne, and it's like, I agree with you. It's like, yeah, I like Bourne. If he's the last receiver on your roster, that's okay. If you are projecting Bourne going forward and he's one of your two best receivers, then you're like, okay, we might need to upgrade here. And there's nothing against Kendrick Bourne. And I like the way he played for the 49ers down the stretch and he got some earned some playing time, you know? And he earned it as an undrafted player. I love that when guys earn a roster spot when they're not drafted because it's not easy. But Richie James, I think if I had to guess, he's going to be more explosive and you were going to see him be like, you know, yeah, okay, we want to get this guy on the field, want to get the ball in this guy's hands with Kendrick Bourne. You're like, oh, he's fine, but you're not like, hey, feed Kendrick Bourne, right? And I think James might be a guy
who doesn't seem like a game changer.
Yes. So for that reason, it could be Richie James, but we have to see him. Maybe he shows up, he's like, ah, he's too small and doesn't really, you know, he can't separate versus NFL corners like you could in college. And then maybe you're like, okay, we need Bourne's size. So that would be the argument there. But we'll see. Yeah, we need to see Richie James on the field first. So it's incomplete.
To be determined.
Yep, absolutely. Let's see here. Is this our guy Mark?
Are you going to let Mark on the show?
Let's see if he brings us down here with this question.
Man, you're playing with fire right now, Peacock.
Oh, this is positive, I think. He says, I'm sky high thinking about how great the offense can be this season. Jimmy G, a much improved O-line, McKinnon, Garcon, Goodwin, Taylor, Kittle, Pettis. It's like Lynch is Q to Shanahan's James Bond. This nice. Question, who would bring Niners fans back to Earth? So much hype.
See, look at that. Look at that. He's like, this is going to be so great. I'm so excited. But we should come back down to earth, guys. Yeah. Mark. Always Mark.
We need the Debbie Downer sounder. I don't even understand what his question is. I think the first part we should just
say who should bring us back down?
Who would bring the Niners fans back down?
Why would we want to come back down?
We want to be in outer space, man.
We've been so down the last couple of years. Let's be up. Let's be excited.
Let's just reread this and end it in this spot. Jimmy G, a much proved O-line, McKinnon, Garcon, Goodwin, Taylor, Kittle, Pettis, and then Shanahan is James Bond. I like that. Okay.
Amen, Mark. Yeah. Thanks, amen.
Mark.
Good one, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. You know what it makes me think of? The Room. Have you seen The Room?
Of course.
Yeah.
What's the name again?
Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
The scene with the dog in the flower shop. That is probably one of the best scenes in cinematic history.
Have you seen Disaster Artist? Yes.
Oh, hi, Dougie. Yes, I have. And that's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you've seen that movie.
They're both solid. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, look it up. Get going.
Yep.
It's worth it.
Absolutely. Which 2018 draft pick are you most excited to see in camp? This question from 904 Niners Nation.
Let me real quick. Make sure you watch The Right Room, too. There's two out there.
There's Room, and then there's The Room.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Right? Yeah. Make sure you get the right one.
Seen both.
The Oscar-nominated one.
Right. Both good, but one's much more serious than the other.
Yes. Sorry, what was the question?
The question from 904 Niners Nation, which 2018 draft pick are you most excited to see in camp?
Ooh, that's solid. I mean, you know, McGlinchey's not really exciting. There's nothing really exciting going on about him.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's a good one. Probably Pettis.
Yeah, I would say.
I want to see how quick he is.
I would say the two wide receivers because.
Yeah, and James, yeah.
You just like to see how they fit in, how those puzzle pieces work, how their athleticism looks. See how dynamic they look. With McGlinchey, I kind of can picture what he's already going to look like for the 49ers. It's not
much
that
like
different.
His tape.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
In red and gold.
But with the offense and how Shanahan envisions these guys, you know, how are they going to use him? What did he see? And you get a little bit bigger glimpse into the draft process. It's like, oh, okay, this is why he wanted to draft him because he wanted to use him like this. So that's why the two wide receivers for me would be the ones.
You brought up 904 Niners. He was posting a bunch of pictures about the throwback uniforms. I hear they're going to announce that on Wednesday what they're going to be. Yeah, this year. And he kept putting up that ugly white one with the white pants and the white outlines on the number. No.
See, okay, I'm glad you're with me. I think there was a question about this,
hideous.
Actually. There was a question about this. So that was the Super Bowl year, right?
Yeah, they had it was.
And
which sucks because anytime you see any shots of that Super Bowl highlights, they're in those hideous unis.
No, it's a great point because that's why I'm torn on this because obviously, okay, these are the ones they wore when they won the Super Bowl, which is cool, you know? That's cool. But I'm glad if they don't ever wear those again because they're awful. So
they should be retired. They won a Super Bowl. They're done.
Yeah, it's like you
retired. I mean, it's only one game, I think, but still.
And it's fine, whatever. Throw them out there for one game. But they're not great uniforms. People are like, oh, yeah, let's bring them back. And it's like, no. Let's let those die forever. Let's bring back the rings and not the uniforms. How about that?
I mean, it's cool because, like, you know, you think about it, you're like, Dion was wearing it, you know, but still. No. Ugh.
It's so bad. I've always hated that uniform. And then they went to the darker red, which I hated too. It was like, what are you guys doing, man?
It was like a maroon or something. Yeah.
I was so excited when they got back to the classic 80s colors, like that's where it should be. They're in a sweet spot there.
Yeah, they should never leave those.
Yeah. Well, whatever. One game, you're gonna get.
Yeah, weird. Right. So we can talk about it here and bash them.
Right. We can bash it. It's gonna look bad. It's they're not flattering uniforms. There's nothing good about that color scheme and combination.
Good.
And remember the old 49ers logo they tried to throw out there, and people just crushed
49ers
it.
Or something.
Yeah, it just says 49ers. It looked like it looked like a potato chip logo or something.
It was so bad.
Really, really terrible.
New 49ers with flavor.
All right. Where are we at here? I think I have another question I wanted to get to. Oh, maybe on email. Where's the email at here? All right. Let's finish it off with Steven. He says, hey, guys, one for the mailbag. What do you think about the idea that an improved secondary is going to help guys up front generate more pressure as pass rushers and close out more sacks? When our secondary is getting burned pretty much at the line of scrimmage, the QB doesn't need to hold on the ball very long. I understand you don't want to rely on coverage sacks, but it seemed like there were a lot of plays where Defoe is standing over a quarterback who just got the ball out. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Steven. You're on board with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That sounds 100% accurate. Like that will lead to more sacks.
I think it will. But at the same time, you can't just count on that. And that's
where especially when you got a guy like Russell Wilson that you play twice a year.
And it's definitely important, and it's part of it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that does lead to more sacks. But that alone can't account for all the pass rush. And then it's the other side of it too. It's like, well, if you got better pass rushing the passer, then they don't have to cover as long either. So let's help them both out, and let's just let's add to talent on both of those standpoints, right? In both of those areas, and just get better all the way around.
It just takes you right back to the draft, and like, why wouldn't you even take a shot on someone? You know, a shot on some bendy, fast edge rusher.
Right. And the guys they did bring in are big ends again. So they have like 10 big ends, and then Castrius Marsh, they really love him. And I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. Their best pass rusher last year, they let go.
Yeah, he's so old.
You could argue that they're a worse pass rushing team than they were this time last year. Yeah, actually, never mind. They didn't even have Elvis
that's
yet
true.
At this time
last year. They got him late, didn't
but
they?
Basically, yeah. By the time the season started last year, they had better pass rushers. Their best pass rusher was Elvis Dumervil.
Maybe they're waiting for something like that again. You know, just some other – somebody that's going to get cut from some team, and they, you know, they're going to have the money to throw at somebody.
The one player that has a chance – I mean, obviously, Cassius Marsh for a full year. He looked okay. He's going to get a lot of opportunities. Jeremiah Tauschew is the big one because he's got the athleticism. He's got that burst off the edge, but he just kind of never showed it fully.
Yeah, he couldn't beat out Joey Bosa. What a loser.
Right. But even when he did play, it's weird. He has some Eli Harold. Eli Harold has this thing where it's like, oh, man, I love Eli Harold. He's a strong player. He's athletic. He timed
motor's
well
always
at the
running,
combine.
Yeah.
He's got a high motor, which you need as a pass rusher. So I love that. But he just doesn't get sacks. He doesn't get there. And Jeremiah Tauschew has kind of been like that throughout his career. So maybe they're going to untap something there, and their pass rush specialist coach will help some of that out and unlock some stuff from some of these guys. So that's what you're hoping for. Steven's right on the money about the coverage side of things really helping out. And then the other bit of that is probably going to have to be from guys each incrementally getting better that they already have.
Hey, Mark, did you see what Brian did there? He talked about something very positive and then didn't bring everybody down afterwards.
Yep. So, Mark, rewind that. Listen again. use that in your repertoire in your next Twitter mailbag. We're going to come back to you one more time.
Yeah, you get one more shot, Mark.
But if you bring Nick down, man, I can't keep bringing you back on the show. I can't have my co-host down like that.
Yeah, man. I'm always scared when you say the name Mark. I'm like, uh-oh, what's coming?
Oh, there's a couple of different Marks, too, so I might be getting some of them mixed up.
I think all Marks are the same. Let's throw them all in the same category.
This from Richard real quick. He said his Wednesday question is, what if both teams come out and kneel? Are the penalties offsetting? If so, what's the point?
There you go.
Then you have to replay the anthem.
Yeah. Start over. That's a good one. Replay first down.
I like that a lot. Thanks, Richard. All right. Thanks, everybody, for getting involved in the mailbag. That's going to do it for us on this episode of Locked On 49ers. Nick, thanks again, as always.
My pleasure, my friend.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow, I think we're going to do what I thought I was going to do Tuesday. We're going to bring on Brad Motter, who is the host of Locked On Rams, and start looking a little bit closer at some of the NFC West opponents here for the 49ers. Talk to you guys then right here on Locked On 49ers.
See you.